Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now, and of course in colour, in technicolours, Paul Hilde, full-time investor, equity analyst. And can you see the colour of the shirt I'm wearing, Paul? It's sort of pinky red. It's symbolic.
No, it looks very tan there. It looks mauve, I guess, would be probably a better sort of description of it. But
I picked this out specifically because that's symbolic for the markets, pretty much. It's already sort of, it's been awful, hasn't it? Dreadful. And
absolutely appalling.
But the thing is, as if it wasn't hard enough anyway, you know, we've got the government. And I did say last night on Twitter, I said, good job they put that growth plan in, eh? If they'd done something stupid, you imagine what would happen to the markets. So you've got the Bank of England, the government, fighting against each other. I just think there's some embarrassing conversations going on there because they said, what are you doing? I'm trying to bring inflation down and you're trying to push it back up. So, it's a horrible market. But people saying on sort of CNBC and all that thing, I think the Fed especially are trying to get the heavy lifting done this year in an almost hit peak rates. And I think if we see that, if we know the direction is stopping, it'll help the markets in a lot, you know?
Yeah, and I think that a lot, you know, the key indicators, a lot of the inflation sort of KPIs are actually falling, and certainly on the commodities and the oil stocks, etc. So on that basis, then, with a bit of luck, we should get some reasonable news on inflation. Clearly, psychologically, the Fed can't do another U-turn and therefore has got to publicly stay firm. But I'm actually quite sanguine in terms of next year, because I think what we'll see is that inflation will roll over. We'll reach a sort of impasse in Ukraine, whether that's going to be a stalemate. And actually, I know it sounds bizarre and sort of counterintuitive, but sort of like annexing sort of the Donbas region or half of East Ukraine, effectively what that means is that essentially it's going to be really tough for Ukraine to actually go across the border and to start getting it. So on that, unfortunately, what it's going to mean is that there are actually, there's going to be a firm border like the Crimea. And on that basis, then we shouldn't get a further escalation in tensions there. And that may actually calm down the whole market. And if you get that, plus you get China stopping its rolling lockdowns and you get inflation rolling over, I can see a lot of the volatility in the bond market coming out, both on the Fed and in the UK. And, we might have a decent stock market rally next year. And I mean, all I would say big picture wise is that unless you're very, very lucky, your portfolio has been decimated in the small cap land over the last 12 months. This is, in my view, this is absolutely not the time to sell. Stay firm and just ride out the potential contagion and the volatility, and just, you know, turn off your screen if you have to.
Yeah. I looked at some stats last night. The FTSE All Share, okay? Stocks hitting 52-week highs, 1. Stocks hitting 52-week lows, 145. And on the 200-day moving average on AIM, you got 85% below the 200-day moving average, 15% only above it. So it is, I mean, and I did say this is almost a contrarian indicator. You know, not many more can go down. It's almost all of them are down. So it is worrying from that point of view. But like I said, the thing the government has done is it also doesn't help. It exacerbates the situation because people are saying now mortgage rates could rise to 6%. So if people can afford a mortgage, can they get one? It's not only about affordability, it's availability. I think 1,100 products have been pulled off the lines, and that's going to have a knock on impact, you know, to house
builders. That's temporary,
banks,
though,
you know.
Justin.
I know, but it will still hit
the
figures,
don't get
though.
Sucked in by the media. That'll calm itself down. The banks are hugely capitalized at the moment. They've got plenty of spare resources to fund the mortgages. Yeah, that will happen. All they're doing is resetting, holding back. In a month's time, that will start rolling forward again. So don't get spooked by it.
No, I know that's happening. We know the markets, you know, price this in. Like I said, house builders are down over 10% this week alone. So
it's crazy.
They're already pricing this in already. I mean, so any results that are delayed will be priced in. But so it will be a hit. But I remember a month back, I said I turned a bit bearish, and I think it's going to get worse for longer. I mean, the economy will, I think. But like I said, the markets are pricing this in. You know, AIM now is down. But 40%, you know, in all share is down 40%. That's historically, you know, a big drop.
Yeah, in the last 12 months, yeah. So this is not the time to sell. In fact, if anything, I mean, I've actually bought over the last 2 weeks. I mean, I interviewed a fund manager at Harwood Capital who looks after Rockwood Strategic, a guy called Richard Staveley, and he pointed out to me Argentex, which is basically a B2B Forex, essentially intermediary. It's almost like a interdealer broker, not quite to the scale of sort of, you know, TPI cap, etc., but similar sort of thing. But it does a sort of like high touch bespoke services to corporates and to sort of like the financial services, like, you know, sort of hedge funds and fund managers and stuff like that, to convert foreign sterling into sort of foreign currency and vice versa. And they really just look after large companies. So anywhere between, you know, businesses wanting £1 million to £500 million sort of converted. Anyway, he pointed out to me, I wrote about it positively because I thought this was really quite good, because it's in a similar area to Equals, which has obviously done really well over the last sort of 2 years, etc. But the shares have been battered really largely on sentiment for Argentex, and they're trading at sort of like just south of sort of 2x sales, and the market for these type of things trades on about 5x sales. And the poster child is Alpha FX, which is their closest competitor, really. And I think that trades on even more than 5x sales. Last time I saw it, it was about 6 to 7x sales. So there's plenty of sort of catch up. And, you know, it's got lots and lots of sort of growth opportunities. And I know they're coming out with a trading update in about sort of 2 weeks' time. Anyways, so I spoke to Richard about it. He was positive. I did a lot of analysis and I wrote about it. And then 2 days after publishing, or 2 or 3 days after publishing the article, I then picked up, I just used all my remaining cash. I mean, I haven't got that much cash left anyway, because I'm fully loaded. But what I had, I've then put into Argentex. And I think they'll do well on numerous fronts. First, you've got sort of the underlying growth, both international expansion. They're going into Europe. They've got a big regulatory clearance in Holland just recently. They're also in Australia. They're moving into, their heartland is the UK. They're also overlaying their bespoke sort of people-orientated services, an online technology platform as well, and that's coming through. And they're sort of like trying to move more into sort of like the B2B sort of like immediate spot conversion of Forex, because they do a lot of forwards and a lot of futures. Now, the good thing of what they do, that's about 50% of their business. The good thing about that is it's highly, you know, bespoke, and they're winning market share from the banks on that. The only downside is that it actually takes up quite a lot of regulatory capital. So they have a big cash balance. I mean, they're a 100 million market cap business. They've got roughly around about 38 million of net cash. So huge amounts of cash support there. But some of it's actually used up for regulatory capital. So I think sort of liquid funds, I'm just guessing, but I think they've probably got about 25 mil, just north of 25 mil they can actually use, but still, you know, quarter of their actual market cap. But if they add on that sort of technology layer onto their bespoke platform, they will be really, really flying. And that's where I think you could see a huge re-rating in this stock, not only because of their international expansion and the brand, but also on the technology side, as they bring that in over the next 1 to 2 years, and that could really drive, you know, the rating. They're profitable, but they're very profitable and cash generative. Right? I mean, their EBIT margins are 40%, and their top line, their top line is growing at more than 20%, like for like. So they're really absolutely in a lovely spot, and effectively they equals and Alpha FX are all winning market share from the major banks who have a control roughly around about 85% in the UK. So this, so effectively, these are fintech challengers. And you need to have reached a critical mass to be able to actually to scale the business and to carry on growing. Because if you're with a, you know, a large corporate, et cetera, they're not going to push their business down into a very small sort of mom and pop operation. And in fact, the regulators won't even allow you to take on their funds. And they don't actually, they offer a totally neutral, riskless Forex book. So they don't take any Forex sort of risk on it. The only risk they have is counterparty if one of their clients, which we're talking big businesses here, suddenly went pop. And then they'd obviously, they do part half the transaction and then they lay off the other side of the transaction on a neutral basis. But they would then have to actually, you know, cover that part. But that rarely happens. And they rarely, I mean, in their 11-year, 12-year history, that's hardly ever happened. So because they use the big companies and they match it off perfectly anyway, both on a time and on the actual currency. And I say they're coming out of the trading update in a couple of weeks. I hope to touch base with the CEO, Harry Adams, and let's see how...
Lord Digby. Well, do you know what? Oddly, about two months ago, you know, John Hume and I do this Vox screen stocks, and he just runs some screeners. And a few weeks back, we looked at it. Argentex came up, and he picked it. He said, I quite like this. And
Did he? Yeah, did he buy any at all?
No. Well, yesterday, again, it came up. He said that we did a screener on cash-rich companies that are profitable below sort of 250 market cap. And it came up again. He said, I'm not going to pick that, so I picked that. And I looked into it, and I sort of run it through my spreadsheet. I thought, look at the margins. I thought, what? Yeah. So, operating margin 32%. And like I said, 40% EBITDA margins, a big cash pile. And I specifically did control F on their results, looking for volatility. And they benefit, they said, a bit from volatility. That's not the main thing. But I mean, I thought, okay, now I can't see currencies being less volatile over the next 6 months. They're going to be more volatile. There's, you know, it's a dollar shot up. I mean, if every other central bank catches up with the Fed, then of course that's going to swap around a bit, isn't it? So, you know, everything's at a historic low compared to the dollar. So I think, it could do quite well.
They're in a really good spot. I mean, like Equals, I think they're in an excellent spot. And as I say, they're profitable, cash generative. And, you know, they've got plenty of cash in the bank as well. So, you know, they're on a good sort of good growth strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, in their terms of valuation, they've ticked up obviously since I've bought them, but not hugely. But even at sort of like 90p, they're still trading at sort of like less than 8 times EBITDA, which is effective. And the market trades at over 15 times EBITDA. So on just about every single score. And if you look at it on a PEG ratio, then it's even better because their PEG ratio is less than 0.5. I mean, when you look at that with a combination of such strong growth, strong margins, and a very, very large total addressable market, it just smells of that's, you know, I know it's scary to think about buying stocks, but I did, you know, because I just think it's compelling. And
do you know what also backed it up a little bit? And I quite like this is I was talking to you a while back saying now if I'm ever looking at something, it's got to be an uptrend because so many companies are in a downtrend and they'll keep getting cheaper. I looked at the chart of this and I've got to say it's got that, you know, all important 50-day crossing the 200-day moving average, the upside, which is the start generally of a trend, uptrend. So it is looking, it's like the chart has bottomed out. And so, you know, fundamentally it's good, you know, what to buy and when to buy. Pretty much the chart looks quite good. Maybe that was you helping the loading in there, helping the chart.
I'll say here publicly, I will buy some more when I get some more cash. And because I actually think, I mean, I know Singers, the house broker, has got a price target of roughly around 120 or 120. 2021, I think it is. But if you just look at it on a sort of like, you know, closing that gap with the rest of the industry, this could double. This could literally go well over 150p to perhaps £2 in the next sort of 12 to 24 months. And given the uncertainty elsewhere, uncertainty plays well to this, as you rightly point out, in terms of the, you know, the Forex volatility.
It's a stock I buy. I mean, you know what, if I had spare cash, I'd buy some. Maybe I'd have to freeze some up somewhere. But no, genuinely, I quite liked it.
And it's liquid as well, which is good, as in, like, you know, reasonably, it's a 100 million market cap business. Now, just actually, just on, you know, big picture wise, given the volatility, et cetera, have you sort of like thought about sort of like sort of amending or tweaking your strategy from small? Hang on, just let me finish.
Yeah.
From sort of like, you know, obviously.
You
well, no, you obviously operate a very high conviction, concentrated, but very micro cap portfolio, which is brilliant in terms of, you know, focusing attention on what you're good at. But equally, when it comes to a downturn, the liquidity dries up and you can't, effectively, they become unlisted stocks for all intents and purposes, for people like me and you anyway.
No, absolutely. I said 2 weeks ago, I mean, going forward, I'm probably going to focus on five macro caps that I've got high conviction in, but I'll also have rather than just hold cash, I will have probably a fund just to dip in. And so I'm looking, for example, the S&P fund. This is a good stat. I went back to 1980 looking at just the moving averages, and this S&P, Apple's a big, obviously, constituent. In fact, Apple was down 6% yesterday, and that's 7% of the S&P. So that's why I took a hit.
But did you take a bite out of it?
No. Hey. No.
A crunch.
Yeah. So I've been going back to 1980, just looking at that like the trend lines of 50-day, 20-day. And if you actually, you know, bought on the cross-up and sold on the cross-down, there's an 80% chance of a gain, average gain 20% on the S&P fund. Like I said, 20% chance of loss, and that's about 6% if you stick to that. So that's what I'll use going forward as a fund. And I'm also looking at, like you talked about liquidity, and looking at daily average shares traded in a stock. It's no point holding multiples, you know, of that daily average. Because if something goes wrong, you want to get out. The liquidity is not there. So you've got to pay attention to that a little bit more, you know. So I'll still focus on market caps, but as I said, I won't just hold cash. And I won't just, if I have cash, I won't just put in more into market cap. I'll just have some in a fund as well, because that'll help with liquidity and all that stuff. So yeah, I've got to amend it, because it's been emotionally painful. We know they oversell, you know, in downturns, but they'll overperform and, you know, overperform in upturns. But this downturn, it's all about learning, isn't it? And next time, I won't be caught in a downturn like this, just in micro caps. I'll have a fund, and I'll probably get out of that when the trend shows it's going lower. So,
I only raise it because, you know, I've been there and still am in certain stocks. I mean, I've got, as you know, Rosslyn Data Tech, which I've had in there for since really the pandemic started, so 2.5 years, and it's just gone south, and it's about so just less than 2p, but came out with an interesting contract actually, because it's been through a lot of investment in terms of beefing up its platform, which does essentially sort of AI-enabled sort of procurement software for large corporates. Anyway, it won a big contract, £500,000, 3-year deal with a Swiss med tech business that operates internationally, which is a great statement of intent. Now, it's early days, and the management team now has really got to sort of like, you know, kick on and to seal some more contracts. But it does sort of like rubber stamp all the technology development that actually they've been doing to make it more functionally capable, and to make it easier for users across that particular, say, a large group, and to get, you know, proper sort of compelling procurement data out for its corporates. And it's got a couple of other divisions it's looking to sort of like offload as well. So there's lots of moving parts. It's difficult to actually value until they make those disposals, and obviously disposals in these markets going to be tough. But if they can still carry on winning those contracts, driving the top line, then I think the business could do really well. But I would say is that, you know, coming back to the liquidity issue, this is only a sort of 6 to 7 million market cap company, and I bought a big slunk sort of like, let's say, 2.5 years ago, and I haven't bought or sold any at all because the liquidity just isn't there. So, you know, that the reason why I mentioned it is that yes, it's turning, which is great, or I hope it's turning. And it also underpins their strategy to use more partners as well, rather than just do all their own internal sales, because it came through a third party reseller, et cetera, this particular contract. But again, if they can kick on with the sales, then the business will do really, really well over the next 12 to 24 months. Anyway, put it this way, regardless of what I want to do in terms of, I mean, I want to hold and see the business reach fruition, because I've been here long enough and it definitely isn't a time to sell, that's for sure. But if I wanted to sell, I need the gap, there was no chance I'd be able to do that, because there just isn't any, you know, major liquidity for the kind of holding that I have.
That's why I love shares. You're always learning, you know. I mean, my strategy a while back was to hold about 20-30% of my portfolio in a fund, a decent fund, so I could have the dip in and dip out. And then I thought, I get rid of that, I can earn a lot more money in microcaps, which I did. But then the downturn has happened, and you get, obviously, it oversells. And I should have stuck with that, you know, of just holding that liquidity in a bit of a fund there and reduce my... but I didn't do that. And, of course, I got a bit too greedy. It did pay off to a certain extent, but now it's the hurt and the pain, the emotional pain is like kicking in. You get over greedy, you know, and so I should have stuck with that. But in this downturn, though, you know, if you can get sort of microcap returns on bigger stocks now, can't you? They've taken this massive hammering. Looking round at bigger cap stocks.
Yeah, well, I mean, another stock where I've got plenty of liquidity. I'm not short of liquidity, but I've been absolutely hammered is Boohoo.
I was just talking about that. I was looking at that. Right? So if that gets back to... But what I did, what was surprised at, and I don't know if this is true, where this is coming from, but even I saw a broken note on it, and 2024, they're only expected to do what? Pre-tax profit of 1.7 million? And I thought, what?
Yeah, but this they're just totally low. But let's be clear about it. The shares are not operating on fundamentals, okay? They're operating on sentiment and people short-selling it. It's the number one short-sold stock, I think, on the FTSE at the moment, or it certainly was. Yeah. So it's nothing to do with the fundamentals, which are obviously really, really challenged. The key is can the management team continue with its turnaround strategy and actually start delivering, again, top-line growth next year, when the automation for the facility in Sheffield happened, the warehouse, but when the new sort of, you know, warehouses in the States come on operation, roughly around about sort of 9 months' time, can the business then really start driving the top line growth out in the United States? Because it's quite a big business there, yeah. And if you believe, yes, they will be able to do that despite the competition, despite the sort of the challenge consumer environment, then the shares are just ridiculously cheap. But there's a lot of people who are saying the business is going bust. I personally don't think it is, and so I mean, you know,
I was surprised.
I can have a smile on my face, because I bought the shares, quite a few of them, you know, full position, sort of like £2.70. And I think they're about 35p now.
Yeah, I think they hit like 30 pence now. And they were bounced back up on that result. But, I was surprised by that. I put them through the spreadsheet and I thought, 1.7 million profit for 2024. Surely that can't be right for £500 million. And I looked at ASOS as well. And I think that's similar. And also another company I looked at as well is JD Sports and Future, you know, Future PLC. Mm. Then Digital Media, they take a big of it, not as big as ASOS and Boohoo, but they took a hit. But there's a good chance here, like I said, to get in some really decent businesses that have taken a massive knock. And, you know, there won't have any problem with liquidity there, because the big companies are trading millions. So
there's no liquidity issue in that one, that's for sure. But there's no chance I'm actually going to bail on it, because, you know, I've actually spoken to the CEO, John Little, a couple of times, and I'm dead impressed. And I think they'll turn this around, there's no doubt about it. But
yeah,
I've been saying that for some time.
I know. Well, do you know what? I remember us being bullish towards the end of 2021, and of course we didn't know the Ukrainian war was going to happen, but I mean, we've almost been delayed by a year, so I'm almost saying now I think 2023 is going to be better, because it's just historical sell-off in the markets. I mean, once we hit that peak, you know, rate of interest where we see that stopping, it'll hold for a while, of course, they reckon, but I mean, at least it's not going to keep going up. That's the worry, uncertainty of how far these interest rates will go. Once that uncertainty is removed, I think then we can crack on a little bit. But yeah,
you'll also get, you know, continued or accelerated trend of M&A of overseas buyers, yeah, particularly the US, come knocking on the doors of UK companies. I mean, look at sterling; it's so damn cheap that they can just cherry pick some excellent companies at rock bottom prices for the long term. And you're already seeing that. I mean, Micro Focus went, you know, RPS has gone. There's lots of sort of like crown jewels within sort of like, you know, the UK market that are being bought out. You don't want your company to be bought out of the song, no doubt about it. But that will underpin certainly some of the valuations. You know, if you've selected good, solid, you know, underlying companies, then hold them. So, you know.
And what's frustrating in this market, people are genuinely, there's a sentiment index on retail traders on CNBC, and they're saying it's an all-time low and most people have switched off. And engagement is very low on Twitter and everything. You see that. And when people switch off generally, again, that's a contrary indicator that people who would have sold have sold or otherwise they've switched off. So, but you also get people just going for cash. In fact, do you know what? This week, E-Energy came out with the launch of E-Solar. And it was a good update. Literally, they've got a load of orders from existing and new customers, and they've got some 8.9 megawatts of orders, which is about 30,000 300 watt panels, a standard sort of thing. That's how much they ordered. It doesn't cost them anything. It literally, and working that out, I mean, they mentioned back in May they had 7.8 million of contracted value for this on 2.5 megawatts, I think it was, and now they've got 9 megawatts. So it's growing very quickly. It's only one part of their business, and it's no risk to them because they have a funding partner that does all this. And they generally, someone took a big sell in there, and they used liquidity just to sell the stock. And I thought,
yeah, but Justin, the key for that, yeah, is that it's a really, really competitive area. In the UK, yeah, that could be a loss. You know, it could actually drive losses, future losses, or very low margin business. If they went into sort of like micro generator, sort of like, you know, the wind turbines at home, then that may be something different. But essentially, if you're adding to the existing, you know, sort of like suppliers of just solar panels or those projects, then that's a really tough ask. There's not much USPs involved in that operation.
No, I know, but their offering is not that. I mean, their offering is an integrated brand from literally an award-winning, it's sort of smart meters, behind-the-meter sort of analytics. Their focus is so that's a sell. They go from that.
Oh, okay, fine, gotcha.
They go from that to procurement to EV charging, on-site. So it's a lot. It's also consultancy. So most of their contracts, the average contract is between 3 and 6 years. It's recurring, and it's a beer on consultancy, you know, smart meters, it's all that. And it's also, you know, the customers, clients save money straight away because it's a subscription model, so they don't pay anything. They save is paid to E-Energy pretty much. So that's one part of like a five-part integration end-to-end offering.
Oh, okay.
It's not that is not their business, you know. But what I'm saying is, it's just like that was decent news, though. It's like, you know, it's literally, I think it's like 150k net margin to them per megawatt, some of that. But that's just one part of the. I think their broker said it's the most. It's a digital, you know, most digital full offering out there at the moment. But it's very. But even that, though, you know, it's literally, we are now. They are at like 24 million market cap. They have a 25 million forward order book. Most of the rec contracts are 5-6 years long. They did 89% of contracted revenue for the quarter one, which starts the half year there, before the quarter started. You know, 40% of their revenue for the entire year was done before the year started. So,
yeah, okay.
And yet, you know, this add-on, it's an add-on really to the offering this thing was, and someone just took, you know, one just dumped a bit of low stock, and then, for heaven's sake, you know, yeah. It's just liquidity events being used by them. You know, I mean, in fact, I talked a while about U Group, and they do sort of energy as well. And the energy, and look at their results. You can see energy is going to be a problem for a long time for businesses, even with this sort of cap, which is on usage. People see £2,500 cap. It's not £2,500. It's on usage. You go above a certain usage, and that will shoot up. And if you're a business, you use lots of energy, you can't help doing that. But I mean, U Group. I mean, just look at their results came out for 6 months. and 96% increase in revenue, 129 million. The margins are quite low there, but even profit before tax went up 389% to 4.4 million. Cash gone up from 11.5 to 15.7. And I think they're just 40 million market cap. And the growth is phenomenal going forward. And so, you know, it's a very hot area, energy. It'll continue to be as people focus on this area more because the prices are not coming down very quickly. They won't come down very... I mean, if you look at oil and gas, for example, it's come down, but still hanging around. You know, it's not just dropping off a cliff, and I don't think it will drop off a cliff for a while, especially if China opens back up and they start demanding some oil. But anyway.
I think the important bit with the energy is to choose sort of companies with strong USPs and barriers to entry, yeah, and sort of strong brands. And Kreschik fits all about, you know, all the buttons on that one, because, I mean, it came out with absolutely, you know, supercharged results at the half year this week. And sales were up 35% like for like. Huge operating leverage, because most of that growth had come through from its rental and its hire division, lifting sort of like, you know, gross margins and, you know, sort of profit margins. And they're going to do over 25% return on capital employed this year. And I mean, there was obviously a very, and they upgraded expectations as well, so by about sort of 20%. So, I mean, when you put all that together, I mean, my valuation has gone up from £3.30 to £4 per share. And I think they could go a lot, lot higher. And just to give recap for investors, they do load banks, manufacture them and actually and rent them out. And these are really quite sort of niche specialised items that are going in the UK, in Europe, out in the Middle East and into the US. And you're getting secular growth stories, one from digitisation, things like data centres need their own backup power supply, which use a load bank. They've got renewables, which is going into the grid, which make it more unstable. So more people are going to need, you know, backup power supplies. And you've got obviously all, you know, all the extractive industries and the oil and gas industries. Now their large international projects are coming online. So they need, you know, sort of like off-grid backup power supplies, which needs to be tested and commissioned using the load banks. And then even my upgraded numbers for this year, they don't include anything if they get, you know, essentially this power rationing or sort of like blackouts in Europe. Because if there is because of the Putin, you know, sort of problems in Ukraine, et cetera, then you can guarantee large corporates that have got their own backup power supplies are going to try and get those serviced and commissioned and tested before they go into blackouts, because they want to basically make sure that their backup power supplies flipping work as they're supposed to. So these could carry on really driving ahead. And, you know, the shares went up a bit, but didn't go up much from the results. And they were just famically stellar. So the guys are doing a great job. And I interviewed the FD. And when the FD, who's naturally cautious, says the business is flying, it says investors should take note. And I know I've been sort of banging the table for 2 years on this one, but as I say, genuinely, I think my 400p per share valuation is low. I actually think it could go a lot higher. So, you know,
was that a case of, do you think the results, again, a case of just liquidity event for some people just taking a bit of profit, maybe, you know?
Yeah, it is. They've just been used as an ATM. Mm. Yeah, exactly. Mm, and you've got fund managers. You've got plenty of fund managers, small cap, who need to redeem, you know, some of their their shareholders. So they go to some of the stocks that they can actually sell, and the ones they've done well. I mean, Equals have suffered the same sort of thing. Terrific sort of half-year results. With a bit of luck, we'll come out with another positive trading update after the third quarter sometime next month. And the shares are down 15-20% just because it's done so well and people can get out. So, you know, I wouldn't get spooked by the sort of muted reaction. This one, in my view, is in the perfect place at the perfect time with great technology and strong USPs. I mean, one question that investors have had is that how big are the barriers to entry to get into the load bank market? Well, I can tell you they're pretty damn high. And the reason is, let's just say, for instance, you're Amazon and you operate a data center, and you want to make sure that when there's a power cut, your backup power supply works. Are you really going to give it the testing, the commissioning, or the servicing to some sort of Tong, Dip and Harry who just comes around with their own one, you know, mom and pop shop with a? And of course they're not. These are mission critical devices that effectively millions of people depend on to actually work when the power and the lights go off. And so consequently, only the best-in-class companies are going to stay in the business, and they're one of them. So the barriers to entry are actually, the brand is worth a shed load because, You know, people, it's sort of like, you know, would you really have the NHS sort of like wanting to go to Mr. Jones down the road, who's got his, you know, back, who's going to test your emergency sort of like, you know, power? Of course you're not. You're going to go to somebody who knows what they're doing. They've been doing it so for 30 odd years.
I mean, surely there's some people, I mean, competitors like them. There's about four
worldwide. There's Agrico, who got taken out privately. There's Schneider Electric, ASCO, who do it. And I can't remember the other one. There's another, Ashted. Which have got a division in there as well. So the big rental companies who do it. But there's only about four worldwide, and it's a niche market specialist. So, I mean, what will happen is probably they'll get bought out at some point in time because they're doing so well. But it's dead hard to get into this business in terms of the barriers to entry. So I hope, you know, I know there's been a lot of talk about how easy or difficult it is to get into, but I think I've probably hopefully helped people understand that actually it's much tougher than you would actually perceive just because of the customer perception.
Yeah, it's funny when you look at stocks. It's like either, you know, in this market, if you want to, you know, if you're not already investing in a company, either you want to look for companies that have, you know, within strong trends like load. I mean, you know, in energy, in fact, so Trufin as well is quite good because the inflation helps the different parts of the business. Or you look for bombed out, you know, good businesses that in sectors that are downtrodden, you know. So it's either way, isn't it, really? But you've got to make sure that, you know, decent business in the end. You know, there's loads like that now. It's just like, trouble is, if you're sitting on very little cash, you can't take advantage. You need one of the pop up. But either way, good business. In fact, you know, I was looking at Trufin there. It's nice to read sort of, you know, broker notes and understand. Because I did say about Stargo will benefit for even downturn because invoice financing and all that stuff, people will be pushed into that. But they had results out, and as yet, this is still, you know, a tomorrow story. In fact, we are at next week, quarter four. This is when Lloyds and Stargo start commercialising their deal, so we'll see revenues uptick, and they're expected to go from what about 13 million revenue was in 2021, they're more than trebling that by 2023, according to Stargo. It's hard to value this stuff because you don't know how much it's going to do, but I assume with Lloyds saved and all that behind it, it'll do quite well. But they're saying that inflation and rising rates are positive for oxygen finance, which is benefiting local authority. This is one of the companies they own, budgets incentivizing suppliers to use early payments. Higher rates also benefit Stargo and Virtus. So, and they say also PlayStack, they say in downturns, gaming spend doesn't really go down that much. But so it's nice to know that because you're thinking, okay, and you know what? It's been quite steady. That's one of the stocks I've held that hasn't really taken a big dip. It's just gone sideways, little dips up and down. It's nice just to have one of those.
It's good.
It doesn't take a hammering. But even, you know, looking forward, I mean, you know, XP Factor had a massive knock. But their results out, you know, 6 months, I mean, through acquisition, but revenue up 590% to 8.1 million. Gross profit up 536%. But cash of 5.2. And that's on 17 boom sites, 19 escape hunts. By the end of the year, up 27 and 21. And they said, as yet, they haven't been affected too much, you know, they've seen no drop off in footfall or spend, and yet they've been lumped in with everything else. So, you know, there are some bargains out there if your business is still performing. But we're coming to the season now where it's Christmas party season, of course. And I was saying to people, the H2 sort of forecast must be very big compared to H1. I said, well, judge it on your own behavior. How many times do you go out during Christmas time compared to normal times of the year? Probably two or three times more. So you can sort of, you know, extrapolate that a little bit. So, yeah, it'll hopefully, without COVID lockdowns and all that stuff happening from last...
The sentiment is awful, no doubt about it.
Yeah, do you know what? It's been awful the last few years since we've gone from literally, you know, COVID, now Ukraine, now inflation, you think, when are we going to get to a semi-normal year? And you think that's the way the markets are, but...
Volatility is good for stock pickers, though, Justin.
Yeah. No, exactly. If only...
They batter you, but it's good for stock pickers.
Yeah, if only had a tump load of cash at the moment, you know?
That's why sometimes having some liquid funds is always good. Now, another stock that's been pretty stable is actually Avacta during this sort of, like, you know, tool threat. Anyway, they came out with sort of half-year results. Yeah. Everything is absolutely on track. The key value sort of catalyst over the next sort of 6 months is going to be, they're going to get results out for their phase 1A clinical trial of their pro-doxorubicin drug under their precision platform. And they've had brilliant safety data so far, and they've increased the dosage into the patients who are seriously ill. So it says to me that the tolerability of that and the safety profile is absolutely fine. The next part of the jigsaw is the efficacy, is actually the FAP activated sort of like coating on the doxorubicin drug. Does it actually deposit that chemo warhead onto the sort of solid tumor that it's trying to actually shrink or to destroy? And we'll get that information towards the back end of the year, sometime in Q4. But that could be a huge, big positive catalyst if that's the case. I mean, it won't actually say whether it's been, you know, it's shrunk the tumor or actually, totally disarmed the actual tumor. But it will say that the doxorubicin is being deposited on the tumor and is being absorbed by the tumor because they're doing tumor biopsies of it. But I would say, given that doxorubicin as a chemotherapy drug is well known, has been around for 20 years, if you put this anywhere near a tumor or even a healthy cell, it's going to destroy it because it's been shown to do that for ages. So you haven't got to be Einstein to think, actually, if that payload of that chemo payload is actually being deposited on the tumor, it's going to be pretty effective. And it has demonstrated already that it is safe, when you put the drug into people's, when you inject it, it doesn't hurt, that it doesn't cause them undue concern. The tolerability is great. Now, as I say, if that FAP activated enzyme works on the tumor, this will be a major positive catalyst for the actual share. So watch out, if you're a shareholder or an investor, that could really do well at the back end of this year when the results. And I mean, the CEO came out and basically said that, Alistair Smith said that the progress is excellent for the time being, and very optimistic in terms of, how the results could actually progress. So, definitely one to watch that could really do very well over the next sort of 6 months.
Yeah, and I'm not that fully over the story, but one thing I did check is that companies like that, you think, have they got enough cash? And they seem to have 17 million of cash. They've got a decent chunk there, haven't they, to keep going for a long time. So, that's always got to be looked at. I thought, okay, that's fine. And that's good, isn't it? Because you need that.
And they've got,
in this environment, you don't want to go to the market and raise money,
No, and they've also got, even if, in the unlikely event that it didn't actually meet its endpoint goal, then they've got plenty of other strings in their bow, and with the Affirma platform, for instance, is doing lots and lots of therapeutic stuff, LG Chem, for instance, and other key partners as well. So developing its own drugs in that area using its Affirma platform, and it's got the diagnostics part of that as well, the applications. And just to give people an indication, I mean, Merck has recently tried to buy a company called Seattle Genetics, which does essentially antibodies, which is what the Affirma platform is, and does, I think it's some sort of specialist drug using antibodies. And it's worth $25 billion. Now, I'm not saying the Affirma platform is worth that, but all I'd say is that this is a very hot area that's going to be used in different types of drug development throughout the world, and will continue to be because it's highly prized.
Yeah, talk about hot areas. Do you know, I read an article last night that kind of surprised me. Well, not a lot, because I've seen Saudi Arabia, right? They're trying to diversify a little bit from oil and gas, right? And
I think hydrogen.
Well, they're going to do that as well. But I think that's one of the areas they're doing quite well at it. Apparently, they have tournaments out there and everything. One of the areas they're going into is esports. And they're really big arenas. Right, okay. They've got big arenas out there. And I thought, that's very interesting. I hold Gfinity there in esports because there's no news from them for a while. But it is one of these hot areas, and it's also been hammered down. And if you look at sort of Guild, there's a couple of exposures you can get. If you look at Guild, for example, on the stock exchange here in London, they are sponsored, they came at market with David Beckham sponsorship and all that stuff, but they've just announced they've renegotiated the contract to knock him down a bit. But they've also signed up with Sky. And the reason why I mention this, Guild, they've had an awful listing. Since they listed, they've literally came on at ridiculous. It's 9 pence, some of that. And now they've done it. I think they hit 1 pence at one point. But on that news, this is how fast microcaps could move. You know, they literally went from in about 1.5 pence, they went to over 3.5 pence in a session, you know? And I thought, wow.
What's the market cap of Guild Sports?
Guild right now is, but they just want to deal with Sky, an all encompassing. Again, you can show this money going into this area. Saudi Arabia piling money into it. Like Sky are there now, got sponsored for Guild. That's they're only about, I think, 8 million, something like that.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's why you get the volatility.
$12 million.
That's why you're getting the volatility, Justin.
But I interviewed yesterday, which is oddly. I mean, if you rather than chasing spikes like that, I interviewed Blue Star Capital, and that's part of their thing. They invest in esports and blockchain, and they've got Dynasty as well, which is in the Far East, which are doing great guns. And the net asset value of that is way above where they are at the moment. But I'm saying it's very interesting ways of playing this, because one of these themes, I think, esports is not going to get less popular. It's one of the things where big media companies want eyeballs of a demographic they can't quite reach. That's where they get it. And it's getting bigger and bigger. And I wouldn't be surprised in a couple of years' time there's been rumours of it being an Olympic sport. People are questioning whether it is a sport or not. But
it was in the Commonwealth Games, wasn't it?
Yeah. But you've got a question. When you're looking at industries to invest into, just look at money inflow. Where is it coming from? Is there big money going into it? When you see the likes of Saudi Arabia, Sky, all the big sponsorship brands going into it, you think, okay, in a downturn, they do take a hit. But in an upturn, they also motor. And I'm just thinking, different ways to play it. If you want to spread your risk, go for a little fund like Blue Star Capital, something like that. But yeah, I think esports will be massive over the next few years. It's just getting bigger and bigger, Any other news?
There's been plenty of sort of healthcare news. I'll just sort of whiz through. We've got Lung Life, which came out with its interims, which, just to remind investors, is basically doing next generation early stage diagnostics for lung cancer. And it's using circulating tumour cells as its main sort of biomarker. It's a blood test, basically. So it's a lot better. It's non-invasive, etc. And it should hopefully, they're on track for it to launch and make first revenues in about sort of 12 months' time. It's doing a validation study of 425 patients across the sort of US at the moment. Everything's sort of like moving the right direction. They've got sort of like approvals through the states, et cetera, in like New York, et cetera, and about another 46 or 748 other ones. They've got the whole of the US sort of covered. The next sort of key steps are getting coverage on the insurance side, submitting it into the FDA, but they don't actually need FDA approval. They're only doing it simply because it will just raise the profile of the company and the technology. They can launch without it. And then they'll get the fine. I think the actual validation study will finish in the quarter one next year, where the results will then be assimilated in Q2. And presumably, assuming that they do actually verify at 89% positive predictive value, then they go to market in the second half. And just give you an indication, the current standard of care is a CT scan, which is about 60%. So you've got 30% extra, benefit for doctors and to physicians to be able to use these as to help people distinguish whether they've got lung cancer from sort of like indeterminate lung nodules, which is what the patients will have, whether it's cancerous or not, and this will tell them. And so they could be actually totally, really in the sort of the prime position to sort of commercialize that. They've got plenty of cash, over $10 million, and that'll take them through into 2024. So they're fully funded. Technology is doing great, and the shares obviously have been, like everybody else, has been sold off. So, I would point investors to that. I think the shares are about 120, and if you sort of like do the valuation and look at it, what they could do, like a 5% share of this diagnostic market, which is about $3 billion just in the US, they could easily get. I mean, you could justify a share price of well over 20 quid, in fact, 25 quid, with the dollar being so strong against the sterling. So masses of upside. And it's pretty much, they've already done so much piloting of the test. This is technology that's been in development for several years and is backed by sort of Mount Sinai as well. So there should be no reason why it shouldn't work. And to come through the validation study, that'll be a huge value event. So it's one to sort of like, if you hold, I certainly wouldn't be selling in these markets. And if you want that type of exposure into high value diagnostics with large addressable markets and attractive growth profiles, then you know, lung life is absolutely right up there.
Yeah, the total healthcare, another on FDA and Polarian today, it came out.
Oh, yeah.
So, as you know, they successfully passed two phase threes, Polarian, went to the FDA, everything was nailed on, and then all of a sudden they got a complete response letter, which is not a nice letter, it's not a love letter. It's basically saying, you know, we want some more information on this, and so it's been delayed another year. So the date was coming up, I think it was today, I think it was.
It's 3 months, isn't it? Yeah, it's 90 days, isn't it?
Yeah, originally it was going to be, the decision from the FDA, final decision was going to be now, pretty much. And then they got another knocked back from the FDA saying we need more information on the drug manufacturer, the xenon gas they use that goes, people breathe in, which is non-harmful pretty much, but it shows the lungs in better clarity than any other tech out there, and I think it still picks up long COVID whereas no one else can. But now they said if you can get this information from the manufacturer to us in a timely manner, we can just give you a 90-day extension. So they've achieved that today. So hopefully, this is what, the second, third deadline? Hopefully, in 90 days, which takes us, I suppose, past Christmas now. That's how close we are to Christmas now. Past Christmas now. But in the new year, maybe some good news from Polarian. Who knows?
I mean, to me as an you know better than I, but to me as an outsider, the technology is excellent. It's used by research companies around the world. It's top draw. It just is a matter of whether the FDA, for whatever reason, decides to approve it. And if some local manufacturer is lobbying against it to be given approval authorization, you know, you can't do anything about it. And I don't like being sort of like, you know, skeptical about the authenticity of all these decisions by the FDA. I've seen it too often, though, in terms of the independence and, you know, of and deciding. I don't think it will be because of the science or the manufacturing anyway.
Yeah, but what I don't understand, it's most of the guys on the board have had positions in GE, all the big companies, and also this is, you know, compatible with GE machines. It gives them more value for money, you know, to these machines. So it adds value. It's not a detractor, and so, you know, one of these companies just buy them out if they want to. It's not bad. In fact, why, before I can, to what energy crisis? Look at this. So that is that's my energy blanket. That's my from Argos. Literally, put it on my legs. It's freezing in my office. Rather than put the heating on, I just put the electric blanket. Yeah, no, I know what you mean, but I'm just getting too warm down there.
Do you still hold shares in Polarium?
Yeah. I've reduced massively, but because I should have done it before. I literally did very well at the Polarium. I started buying it at 15 pence. I didn't even de-risk at 90-odd pence. You know, so. I had a big chunk in there. So I should have de-risked. That was the lesson. Anytime you get added to my list of, reasons, investing reasons and strategy, whenever you get a sort of a major decision, you know, and it comes from a regulatory body that you have no control over, and if you've done well, just de-risk. You never know. You know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what happens in there. It is a black box situation. What goes in doesn't come out. And you think, well, that's really odd. In future, that will be a lesson I learn. It's a costly lesson. But I'm still up, sort of up. But I mean, it's still taking a knock on a big chunk of money.
I've been there. We've all been there, mate. You know, I mean, let's be clear. But say, Boohoo's down 80-90% since I bought it. So don't give up, that's for sure. Now, just on the healthcare side, Oncommune, they basically do their platform, really, their number center blue ribbon platform is Immuno Insights, which is a sort of like a bio database of sort of autoantibodies, which help big pharma and biotech businesses develop their drugs and also stratify their patient trials in preclinical trials. Anyway, they came out with numbers last week or the week before, and what they said was that because of the uncertainty, it's actually pushed out some of the decision making. But now they're starting to see a real pickup in order flow. So their results weren't quite as good as what they were hoping it to be. That's looking in the rear view mirror. But actually, this year should really be a sort of like a breakthrough period, and their pipeline has significantly increased. It's gone up to about sort of like £11 million pounds. They're running at sort of like new orders at about sort of like, you know, £750,000 per month, and you know, this is a high margin, high profitable division, sort of like, you know, 80% plus gross margins, etc. So it will really drive cash flow and operating leverage when that top line sort of kicks in. They did about 4 million of of sales last year, just under. But they, with this, if this run rate sort of continues, they should be on sort of like, you know, I don't know, it's difficult to say because there's no broker notes out there, but I would say anywhere between sort of 8 to 10 million. And on that basis, they'll probably be cash flow break even and positive as well. So still plenty to do, but yeah, they're sort of like, it does now seem as though, you know, they're really increasing the penetration within their big biopharma type companies. And they're winning new orders coming through. So it's a very, very high value service that they offer to world leading biopharma companies. So it's got huge barriers to entry and huge value to the industry. But the shares obviously were sold off because of the results at the half year and the deferral of some of the, you know, the elongating of the of some of the sales cycles. But I'm pretty sure, you know, the CEO Adam Hill is really sort of getting that business flying, and let's wait and see. And they've also obviously got they've actually got an early stage lung cancer test that's been done out in the US as well with their partner Biodizix, and that it looks promising as well. So they've got multiple sort of like different sort of shots on goal. But really, the real value creator is this ImmunoInsights platform that's now seems to be really winning a lot of orders and has a strong sort of, you know, forward order book for first quarter and the second quarter.
Yeah. And do you know what? I've looked at, I don't know how many charts now with us just now, and I've seen, I think, one above the 200-day moving average. It's a hammer. Look at £2.40 that was, and now it's 60 pence. £2.40 in October, this time last year. So, massive drawdown. So we've got to be close to the bottom. In fact, my stocks, I mean, they are just bumping along now. They're not, you know, not really. Well, I suppose if you get a bad update, they'll fall out of bed. But generally, as long as they're going as expected, operations, they're just bumping on the bottom here, hopefully. You know, so...
I wouldn't... all I would say, Justin, is when you're in small-cap land or micro-cap land, yeah, they're not priced right. Don't kid yourself. They're basically, there's very little price discovery at the moment, and people are not using it as an ATM because they can't. There's no liquidity into it. And all I would say is that whatever price they are at the moment, yeah, and they're not moving on news, that's because they're semi-private companies. It's not because of what the fundamentals and what people will do. They'll either, if they hit their numbers, they'll either go up a lot because they've been sold a lot down, or they'll go down a lot in a whisper, simply because these are the micro caps in this market. Generally, there's a few exceptions, are generally unlisted, really, because there's no price discovery in it. So I wouldn't take any comfort at all about they're not moving, simply because nobody's buying or selling it. That's why it is. Yeah. The spreads will be enormous.
Yeah.
Another one on the healthcare side, which came out with results, is Bellascura, and their fundamentals have really improved over the last 6 months. They've added an extra layer of resilience to their supply chain. They've insourced their manufacturing from a third party manufacturer in the US into their facility in Texas. And, they've brought forward a vital product that their competitors that are struggling to be able to supply for these portable oxygen concentrators going to healthcare. The problem is because they've re-engineered their supply chain and expanded their addressable market, that has basically, you know, sort of disrupted their production for a sort of 3 to 6 month period. So their first half volume they were hoping to do, as was actually their actual volume, was less than what they planned. So they did about, I think it was just over 400, 450 or something like that of units they manufactured and sold. What we should see now in the second half is that that will pick up. It will be 500 plus in Q3 or 500 or so. And then it could be 1,000 to 3,000 in Q4. So you're going to see an absolute exponential growth in orders, and they've been improving their distribution, how wide it is in the US. They're looking to go out, you know, into Europe, into Asia next year as well, using their Chinese manufacturer. So the supply chain, the main thing is what they've been doing is they're putting all the pieces into place to be able to really scale this business rapidly and accelerate top line growth to see that drop through to the bottom line in 2023 and 2024. And they've just had basically that disruption in the first half just meant they couldn't sell. They couldn't meet the demand that they could have shipped out. And of course, the market didn't take that particularly well. So the shares have been sold off. But it's just as a matter of time before that sort of like whole business model really sort of drives forward. And I think an inflection, a value event will be when they do the trading update at the start of next year. Because yes, they will have hit some good numbers in Q3 and Q4. But I think they'll be absolutely knocking the ball out of the park in 2023, and that's driven by the conditions like COPD, pneumonia, and long COVID treatments. And the market is so short of these portable oxygen concentrators, particularly best in class technology that they've got, that it's not surprisingly top notch distributors want to be able to stock it.
Yeah. So give us a prediction, because everything's going up in one way at the moment, pretty much. And when we are at the most bearish, of course, that's when people can't see the market turn around. It often does. The market, doesn't follow general opinion. So when you think we're going to start seeing, the lows in and we'll start climbing higher on the markets, what do you reckon?
You're asking me obviously a question that's impossible to answer, but
I know it's just a guess, is all. But I mean,
I'll give you my best guess, okay? Mm. Which is actually,
put some logic. Behind it,
Yeah, well, no, I'm going to have some logic behind it as well, which I have a bit of rational sort of thought as well. I actually think by November, we're only talking a month and a half away, we could start seeing the start of a major rally. Now, why do I think that? Is because in the US, we will have then had the October CPI report. So we're talking mid-November. And I think because of the like-for-likes will have dropped out, the base effects in the US, you'll see a material decrease in the CPI index. You'll also see a material decrease in sentiment in terms of employees and wages going off. The housing market's already rolling off, so you'll start seeing gain sentiment for rental prices decreasing, or at least softening off as well. So when you put all that together, I think investors will start to twig that actually we've cracked the inflation problem by sort of mid-November when the October figures come out in the US. Once that happens, you will then see expectations of the Fed's interest rates, the fund rates, dropping from about 4.5% to 4.7% next year down to a lot lower, and we'll have accelerated decrease on CPI going forward. That will then improve sentiment around the world. And I think we'll get the same thing in the UK probably another 6 months later. But hey, once the US market loosens up and starts getting a bit more brighter, then that will bring all boats. And so I don't want to... Have a nice Christmas present, in my view.
Yeah, not being skinned. But do you know what? Yeah, you're right. Spot on when I asked you that. I knew you'd going to head straight to the Fed because that is the major point. That moves all markets, of course. And I think you're about right. When the Fed sort of says... They've seen, because a lot of people are saying now, you've overdone it. You have no idea what you're doing to the economy 12 months down the line here because you've raised so quickly. But I was looking at on telly the other day, and they're saying on September 23rd, January's interest rate for the Fed was expected to be 4.3. Already that's come down. So a couple of days later now, it's down to 4.15. And so the expectations are coming down a bit. So, yeah, when you see this, but they have to, obviously Fed are driven by the data, even backward-looking data. But, I mean, once they see that something's having an effect, they understand it's going to continue to have an effect going forward. And the market has screamed at them saying, stop it! Stop raising interest rates, you fools! Then I think they'll sort of say, OK, we've done enough, that's all. But, it could be. But they said, this guy did suddenly struck with me. I think the Fed, and he's an ex-member of the Fed committee, he said, I think the Fed are looking to do all the heavy lifting this year. And then, next year we can look forward.
But the rhetoric—they're not just—they're just going to continue being hawkish in their rhetoric.
Yeah, of course they're talk it down. Yeah, it is.
Because the market's doing all the heavy lifting for them.
If they can talk it down, that's perfect because it doesn't actually affect the economics. If the behaviour changes a little bit,
it'll be lovely timing actually, because it will almost be 2 years to the day that we had that vaccine moment when everything went up when
November 9th.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I think actually the CPI for October comes out about the 13th, 12th, 13th. So it's a few days later. But even so, if we get that and it starts showing that that inflation is rolling over, then all chips are on, I think, will be a risk on big time. Another one, which is baby in the bathwater that is worth mentioning is Venture Life, which is basically an OTC healthcare products business. And we've talked about it a few times. It does sort of, you know, mouthwash like dental, et cetera, But it made two big acquisitions last year, and they were really powering the half year results. And you know, they're a solid business that is basically improving its gross margins as the mix improves from its got a greater share of its own products from third party products. It's obviously got strong brand retention with its consumers. It's still going through some sort of, you know, supply chain issues, but everybody's going through supply chain issues. It was highly, you know, underlying cash generative in the first half, but invested a lot into its inventory because it manufactures specialist healthcare products for other brands. And they have basically underpinned that inventory builds just for security of supply. So the strong cash generation in the business was masked by an inventory increase, but the net debt is still very low. It's about $3 million, and I think that's it's sort of like 0.3 of EBITDA. So there's absolutely no problem with sort of like, you know, that in terms of covenants or anything like that. Very solid balance sheet. And, you know, you'll really start seeing this business growing, you know, dramatically probably next year. And it, historically, over 5 years, it's, you know, it's grown organically by 10 to 20% its own products. And if it continues to do that, then, you know, the margins will just really drop through and it will power ahead. But it's trading at just a ridiculous valuation at the moment. I mean, it's sort of like, I think it's about sort of 5 or 6 times EBITDA, which is just crazy for a branded OTC healthcare products business that typically trade at sort of 12 times minimum. Anyway, sentiment's poor. We all know that. And, you know, it's one basically, if you want a good solid stock that could get, it's about 25 to 30p at the moment. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This could go to a quid very quickly. And I think there's house brokers on about 65p for its valuation, and that's conservative as well. So again, it's baby in the bathwater. But
yeah, but do you know what? I've got to say on the podcast in the week, and I thought if we're thinking that the sentiment is turning, and then you should not be looking at defensive so much. You should be looking at the stocks being hammered down but have potential. And I interviewed a guy called Tony Burt, East Imperial. These are like fever tree. That's their main competitor, I suppose, but they're a micro cap. So these premium quality mixers, you know, and they're based in New Zealand. They've got markets in China, also now open in America. They kept the market in 2021. And since then, they've been hammered because of COVID. Absolutely. To be honest, the IPO started off well. It launched at 8p, went at 20p straight away. Everyone said, this is a new fever tree, massive markets in the Far East. And I've sampled some of the products, very nice. I interviewed Tony, just sent me a couple of bottles of them. But they've gone from 20p down to literally 2p. And now if you look at the growth, if people are going back to normality, you know, look at the sectors that are massively hammered. And those will sort of rally quickly. But just look at East Imperial. I mean, they are doing well. The growth is there. They're coming from a very small base. It's 10 million, or sub 10 million. They're from a small base. But I think, you know, that kind of company that was showing growth, but were knocked massively by COVID. And now they're getting back on track. It could do quite well, you know. And it's in that area where, it's a contrarian story to everything. So, yeah, but then in premium mixers, people are now going cheaper. Yeah, but if the sentiment of the market turns, these kind of stocks that have been hammered down already by that sentiment will rally very quickly. I listened to the interview. Tony's a lovely guy, actually. And he's one of those guys who's really warm to when you chat to them on the podcast. And you think, you've had a really tough time of it, fella, but they're coming through it, you know? And
we've all had a tough time. I mean, one thing which also had a tough time, but just pointed to investors, is Cakebox. And the CEO has just been piling in. He's been absolutely piling into the shares. So that's an absolute, you know, vote of confidence in my book by anybody's standard.
Yeah. How much did he put in now? It's literally a big chunk, isn't it?
I think it's $500,000 or something like that. Yeah. It's certainly over 200,000.
On top of what he held,
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, he's absolutely confident. Another baby in the bathwater one. And then just finally, I know I've had a lot of stick on social media in terms of Revolution Beauty, but all I would say is that CEO Adam Minto is top draw. He'll be trying to turn this business around. They came out and basically said that their auditors have raised some serious concerns before they can actually sign off the numbers. They've appointed a sort of external committee to review those and then to report back. And obviously, the shares will stay suspended until that comes back, and they then get the business fully and operational again. But it's all I would say is a quality business. There's been a few problems which have happened over the last year or so. But when you've got real top quality management, like, you know, Adam Minto, who's desperately keen to sort of turn it round, I'm pretty sure they will. And also Boohoo bought a shed load of shares of them just recently because they can see the value of it. But the shares are suspended. Nobody can do anything about it until they come back. But I could see a big value event when they do, as in, like, you know, could go significantly higher on the back of it. But hey, I don't know. I'm not party to what actually all of the, the investigations are going to bring up.
So Boohoo have 12.8%. And also, who else just bought some? UBS Investment Bank, 6.3%. So some people are piling in, aren't they?
Yeah, well, there's value. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's massively undervalued. But the reason why the shares are off is simply because, one, it's been delisted, which is effectively not delisted. Shares have been suspended, which has meant that a lot of shareholders obviously sold ahead of it because they can't hold the actual shares when it's suspended. And two is just, uncertainty. People don't know what's going to happen. But it's one of those things. Just park. You can't do anything about it if you're a shareholder. And, fingers crossed, things should be a lot better in, say, 6 to 12 months' time.
So who's UBS bought up? They bought when it was suspended. Who have they bought off then? Because I don't know.
I don't know which one it was.
Okay, cool. Marvellous. Anything else? I think we covered a lot there.
No, I knew it was going to be a busy one. I mean, it always is with September.
Yeah, quarter four, of course, all important quarter four. Will we see a positive quarter this year?
Yes.
It's unbelievable. Yes. Hopefully we will. Yeah, I think it could, because the biggest rise has happened in interest rates, and of course, a little bit more maybe, and that's it. But the most important thing is, Paul, the biggest question of all, have you put your heating on yet?
No, I haven't, no.
No. Well, I said November. I said, November? No, you've got to go with them. I said,
it's getting colder, though. It's getting colder in the mornings. No doubt about it.
In the evening before I go to bed, I go, thank you for the
Yeah, evening. I know, yeah. Exactly. Okay. But any investors, just keep your head up and stick. We'll get through this, no doubt about it. So
if you've lasted this long, it's the last few miles of the marathon. This is it's hurting. And talking about that, thanks for the sponsorship, Paul. But last week I nearly died on those 10 peaks. I'm not joking. I didn't realise how bad it was. I got there in the morning with the guy, the guide, Tom, fit-looking guy. He said, okay, guys, let's start. It's 7 a.m. in the morning, Saturday. I said, why are you in such a rush? He said, well, it's quite far. It's 30K. I said, 30K? I thought it was less than 20K. No. He said, 30K? I said, how hard is it, Tom? He said, well, generally, people who come to the Snowdon do 2-3 peaks in a weekend. We're doing 10 a day. And they are mountains. They are actually officially defined as mountains. I literally, mountain one, I nearly give up. I said, I can't do this. There's mountain one. And I nearly give up on mountain three, not four, seven. But in the end, I'm glad I did it. I did like my normal sort of calorie count on my iWatch for days, 600 something. I try to aim for that. I did about 5,000 in that day.
Yeah, well done, matey.
Never again am I ever doing that. But
you've only done it once, so that's good.
But you know what? I think emotionally the markets have been more painful over the last 12 months. But there we are.
Take care.
Thanks, Paul.
Speaking cheers, bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want,
with PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards, so you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.